We're joined by Congressman Mike Boss. Mike, how are you this morning?
Great, Tom. It's good to be with you, and it's good to be in district. So,
didn't I see you working in a kitchen serving food this week?
Yes, I've done that. We visited several food pantries, several places, and some that are tied with the government, some that are just, matter of fact, the one you saw me serving food at is a church in Anna that they actually once a week serve about 200 meals and then deliver to homes about 40 meals. So, yeah, it's when they do this, they do it strictly without government, just volunteers and for volunteering and contributions. That's how they get it done, and they do it every week.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, and I learned this from J.R. Russell at the Marion Ministerial Food Pantry, and that is how dependent they are on the St. Louis Food Bank.
Right. That is the government's one, and I actually visited with Pinckneyville's yesterday, and that St. Louis conglomerate covers not only southeast and central Missouri, but also from about 64 south, about midway across the state, and then Evansville comes out for the other side. And it's amazing with what they do. They do deliveries about once a week to each one of the locations, produce, some meat. That's one of the concerns they have is that for some reason the meat side of it has went away, and we're trying to work with them to figure out, what exactly happened with the St. Louis, whether the contributions are down or exactly what it is. And that's a whole lot of grocers and produce markets and everything like that actually contribute to that. So, yeah. It's a lot of people that are helping, and this is through the USDA commodities and all of that as well. So there is government involvement with that. But for the most part, it's a lot of volunteers.
And it's interesting because I was working with the Golden Circle Senior Citizen Center, and we got a semi of green peppers. I'm not kidding you. That's all it was. It was a semi of frozen green peppers. We're like, what are we going to do with it? Call the radio station and let's give these away because we can't store them all. It comes in these big lumps.
And they don't last forever, so you want to be sure to get them away.
Hey, so healthcare is still, in many minds, the number one issue because it affects us every pay period. It affects us every day when we want healthcare. And there's an issue here. There's really two issues. But I think number one is the decision whether to continue subsidies after the Congressional Budget Office report yesterday. Is that the next item on health care, is whether to continue subsidies?
Sure. Well, the thing is, with the collapse that's occurring, because the cost continues to rise, where does it – I mean, that's when we were talking about that in our bill, it was a slow – sensible change, but as it is now, it may be just the collapse, and then what do you do?
Right. And that subsidies, of course, being the issue. The CBO report saying that premiums would go up and the deficit would go up, I forgot how many billion dollars over a 10-year period. It was a large chunk of change.
Because we did the Medicaid expansion. Everybody that says, hey, we think it's a good thing, well, that's when it was... with the thought that it was going to be able to afford itself by people buying the health care, which they didn't do, and then it is showing the complete collapse of the ACA, and if we do not do something, if we don't do something, it is going to be so very bad.
All right, now here's one of the issues, and the second order of effect of the Charlottesville controversy is a destruction of relationships. Does this Charlottesville, and more recently the comments made by the president yesterday at Trump Tower, endanger the ability of the Republican Party to return to the agenda, especially in relationship to health care and to other issues that are on the agenda as well, whether it's immigration, the wall, whatever it is? There's some issues you're never going to see common ground.
Here's the reality on this, Tom. The frustration, whether it's the frustration of the protesters I have to deal with, the racism that it should be denounced, and this clash in the streets, we must deal with both those issues and the issues that you just mentioned. We can't put aside one for the other. We must go ahead. We've got to calm the people of this nation down. We've got to come together and work together. And we can't let the dividing sides on each side, and it doesn't matter whether it's the protesters of anti-Trump whether it's the left or the right. It doesn't matter whether it's racism from whites. It doesn't matter whether it's racism from blacks. All of these things, we've got to calm those down, those fringes on the outside down, and focus on coming together, those of us with reasonable minds.
Now, when it comes to this item, there are a number of items here. And I think, you know, you're uniquely qualified to answer this, Mike, because I've been giving this a lot of thought. With your time in Springfield and what you saw happen there during the term of Bruce Rauner and what you're seeing in Washington, D.C., is there a common denominator by the way that Democrats deal with a Republican governor and the Republican president? Is there a common denominator of resist, do not assist?
Unfortunately, there is a group that has taken over the Democrat Party that is more about resistance than working together. Now, understand, we have those also on the Republican side. It's just, you know, now we've got to deal with those on our side. But theirs is that they want to pick the ship up and turn it 180 degrees. And if you can't pick it up and turn it 180 degrees, then they're going to vote no on anything and everything, which then adds to and gives power to the Democrats who just want to resist that then can say, oh, well, look, the Republicans can't do anything. But the thing is that it was not the case. You know, with what happened over the last 8 years, there was at least an attempt to work to move certain things. There were certain items that they didn't agree upon. But so we have to beg our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, quit this. Are you willing to sacrifice this nation and the positive things that we can do as a nation just to try to come back into power? My fear is that many of them are willing to do that, specifically Nancy Pelosi and hers. And we know what Mike Madigan has done. It's all about his power. I've said that to you before. And somehow the rank and file need to stand up and say enough.
But you see people like Senator Brian Schatz, who came out yesterday saying Donald Trump's not my president. Here's a senator. He knows better.
Well, let me say it this way. You know, that happened with the last president as well.
Did it?
But let me tell you that at the same time, and I've had this discussion with my son. Remember, he and I had this discussion, and I think I told you that. Is it back whenever Obama and I was arguing, and he said, "I am a Marine. What part of I? He's my commander in chief. Don't you understand?"
Right.
Okay, whether you like Trump or you don't like Trump, okay, he may not be the president you voted for, but he is the president of the United States, and you can't take that away from him.
Ben Carson, and you got the time to speak in Carroll last week.
Yeah, we did. And let me tell you that he's an amazing man. He is wanting to help. We're trying to work with the locals to do the best we can to make sure if people want to remain in Cairo, trying the best we can that they can, as long as they make sure also that they're in safe housing, and that's the real issue, because we've got to make sure you can't live in some of those homes or some of those buildings that they're living in now and be safe. And so we have to make sure that we work together to get that done. He has some unique ideas. He's willing to listen quite often, more than his staff, because his staff is going to strictly follow their administrative rule. Well, the bright side is he can make those administrative rule changes that need to be made.
All right. Now, when it comes to Ben, because I talked to Molly Parker after her visit, and I think some people are giving the impression, look, you're going to have to move out. And then Ben Carson saying, by the grace of God, maybe this place can be saved. Is there a little confusion now?
Well, I think the confusion is that what I just said, the bureaucrats that work underneath him are so busy checking the boxes that they forget the human factor.
Ah.
And let me also say this. that the people that work underneath him, though I can talk to them and have, when some people get in these positions and it's just the way it is, it's like when a person comes in to do it, your audit of a tax, and you try to explain something to them and they just go, well, this is the rule and that's the way it is, and don't try to say, okay, I understand your situation, so how do we work through this? They are just cold, because that's what bureaucrats are. And I don't mean that bad, but that's they come in with the attitude, we follow the rules, and here's what it is. And we've already done that inspection, and by golly, we're not changing our position on those units, I don't care what.
Right.
Well, that's sometimes, you know, it's the same problem I run into D.C., even with some of my staff who have been on the Hill a little while. They tell me all the reasons why you can't, and I tell them all the reasons why we can't. So I hope that we can work with the secretary, Mr. Carson, and you know, he grew up in some very rough inner city environments, and he knows the importance of treating people with respect, trying to work with them. You know, these people don't want to leave. Well, I say that some are okay to leave. I mean, that's up to them. You know, the vouchers are there, and they are being processed. But some, this is their home.
And
we want to do everything we can to make sure if they want to stay, that they can, and if there's housing available.
Mike, that's the only thing. This is their home. A lot of people are going, wait a second, but it's a hovel. Okay, but here's the thing, I got this from the guy who wrote the Grief Recovery Handbook. It says the largest cause of grief in this country is not death, but in 2008 it was from people losing their homes.
Sure.
And I'm like, well, what do you mean? You know, and he explained this to me, that, you know, whenever you've taken out an area of familiarity, your brain does not like this. It, you know, that is, in fact,
yeah,
a loss. And
we're all creatures of habit.
Right. And it's kind of interesting, Mr. Friedman, who just passed away a short time ago. But he was really on these type of things. I thought he was pretty smart about it. Hey, before I let you go, because you and I started with a conversation about health care, okay, and what's
right
to be done, because we're still out here, you know, toting that bail, and it is not any fun when it comes to, well, you know.
Right.
I mean, I could afford health care if I wasn't paying for it.
Exactly.
And so, but right now you're on the way to have a conversation with a number of people on tax reform, and many people do not understand that tax reform is a direct relationship mathematically to health care and its solution and the subsidies and the items we talked about earlier.
That is correct. Let me tell you that, you know, the ability of us to do tax reform in a proper way also is kind of is to the level that we can do it is tied to the health care. But we are I'm on my way. We're to the northern part of the district at Shiloh. We're having a roundtable discussion on the tax reform. We know that the Ways and Means Committee is moving forward with it. Kevin Brady, who is the chairman of Ways and Means, and let me tell you that both Republicans and Democrats are having input on this, and both the House and the Senate and the President, so that we can work on this in a wise manner. My hope is that this isn't something that the establishment of the Democrat Party works to try to block instead of working with us. And I hope that it works out better than health care.
Mike, are you going to be back in the district on the 21st for the total solar eclipse?
I will be around the district. I think that, I mean, when you see the amount of people that are coming in and everything like that, my big concern is for not only safety, it's for infrastructure and the proper preparedness. I believe that Jackson County's done very, very well. I hope that the other counties have prepared in a way. I know that Southern Illinois Airport, I've seen the map of the amount of planes that are coming in. The skies are going to be crowded. The roads are going to be crowded. It should be an amazing event to be part of, but also a challenging event if you are in government and or in healthcare and or in providing services like police, ambulances, all of these items.
Yeah, in radio.
And radio.
Now, check this out. This is a press release from Airbnb. And they say Airbnb projects that Airbnb host communities in Southern Illinois cities along the path of totality will earn a combined $131,000 in supplemental income while welcoming over 800 guest arrivals during the eclipse. Carbondale is number one at 232 guests. Marion comes in 81. Murfreesboro, your hometown, 42.
Yep. It is going to be, you know, it's a... I think it will be an economic boom. We know it's going to be an economic boom just by the fact that there is not a room left. You know, I mean, it is amazing that some friends of mine from Northern Illinois called and said, "Hey, do you think I should come down?" I said, "I think you should have already prepared for it because you're not going to be able to." And I told them they can camp in my front yard.
Yeah, all right. I got a cot. I got a cot in the garage. Yeah, I'm doing the same thing for my mom. It's a just kidding, by the way. It's a mom joke. Mike.
See, you can make comments like, "See, I can't do you that."
You can't.
Not somebody running that against
that. That's right. If somebody right now is recording the show so that they can use what you say against you in the upcoming campaign.
I know.
They're doing it right now. I'm used to it, so. You're still getting used to it, aren't you?
Yeah, you just, let it roll off like water off a duck's back, I guess.
You've become very zen about this, Mike.
Very zen. Is that what it is?
That's the way I interpret when I listen to you. It's a resignation and acceptance of what is real, but not necessarily tolerable or something that is, appealing. But recognizing that, and I hear, listen to your voice very closely, you come to the point where this is what I have to endure to do the job, and that means you have to achieve some type of balance in your life, or you'll become, you'll start to flip out, man. I mean, because people are, they're literally, coming up to you at convenience stores and filming themselves yelling at you.
Yes, and yelling at me about how the person, never mind, I will let that go and say, yes, it does happen.
Yeah.
Factual or not about what they say.
Every once in a while, I'll shake, kind of flip my pen about five or six times and go, okay, high road.
Yeah,
high road.
Exactly.
It's 8:40.
Go to the positive place.
Yeah. Congressman Mike Boss, thanks again for your time, Mike.